This is Jason M.
This is Jason K.
And this is Context Free.
Everybody, welcome to Context Free. Thanks for coming back if you're a return listener, and thanks for listening to us if this is the first time.
One of the topics you brought up was authenticity, and I know we talked about it a little bit last time. You were, I think, trying to contrast it with just being an oversharing nut, right? That has like cameras in your bathroom.
You just started that off with
what? Am I harsh?
No,
what?
You just showed your hand right off the bat.
That oversharing makes you a nut?
Yes. You just tipped your entire hand.
I think if you have cameras in your bathroom for your Instagram, I think that's too much.
That's not what I'm talking about.
I acknowledge the existence of a spectrum, and I think most of us are pretty, I don't know. No, I wasn't.
I mean, by virtue of us sitting here recording this, we are oversharing.
I mean, someone thinks so.
Someone thinks everything, right? I mean, there's always someone out there that's you know, going to think that. Of course.
Well, but so what does authenticity even mean, right? So when I talked about it before, I was, you know, I just think it's an urge that people have in the modern world that so many things are plastic, they're reality TV, like our anyway.
And I'm not talking about that professional oversharing stuff. I'm not talking about oversharing for money. I'm not talking about, I want to be a reality TV star. I want to have
just accidental oversharing.
I'm not talking about, I want to have 8 million YouTube subscribers and market my, basically brand myself. That's not what I'm talking about. Cause once you get into that, now there's no line anymore between what is your career and what is yourself.
Right.
They've merged.
I still think there's a line there, but keep going.
Well, they're probably okay, fine. But you're at least giving the illusion that there's no line.
Well, what you're selling is
what you're selling
no
is
line.
That there's no line, yeah. Right? Whereas people like you and I, we have regular day jobs, we have, you know, our families and lives and everything, and this is just something we're doing every couple of weeks.
And we're much more boring than those people on Instagram.
Absolutely, right? Or there's people that blog, and you know, there's people that have probably started off. I'm talking kind of way back, you know, pre-social media days,
right.
When, you know, early 2000s, like 2001, 2005, that era of blogging,
mm-hmm.
You know, before it was realized how you would really monetize that type of thing. And then the ad money started to really take off of people pushing products, you know, and it becoming unclear as to, you know, product placement in writing or what you're writing about. Are you being genuine? Are you giving authentic opinion, or are you talking about your life where you happen to use these products?
Do you really like the Casper mattress, or do you just want me to click on the ad?
Exactly, right? And so there's a lot of that. I mean, I'm thinking of, you know, bloggers like Deuce. Have you ever heard of Heather Armstrong, right? You know, where she famously lost her job for blogging. And she
the blog-ess.
I don't even know all the various drama with her family. I don't really want to get into it, but I'm sure it caused a lot of complications for her personal life,
right?
Because of how much she was putting out there, and that became her career. Like, her family became a factory of stories.
Well, and I was never a big, like, I guess that was going to come out negatively. Like, I just didn't pay a whole lot of attention to her.
Mm-hmm.
But I think part of her story, right, was that she was, you know, doing marketing in such a way that those sort of things would say, well, tomorrow I expect your children to be on camera making cookies with you or something. I'm not literally saying that, you know, some kind of well-known brands were putting like direct pressure on, I think it was her. This has definitely happened to some bloggers, right? But I thought specifically she kind of gave up the game, she gave up the game just because, you know, they were kind of monetizing
mm-hmm.
her children's lives, right?
Yeah. So that's what I said, her family became a factory.
Yeah. And she reacted against that at some point.
So the where I wanted to go with this is not about the marketing or the branding or the money or any of that stuff. I want to just talk about, as just a regular guy, you know, people out there where we've raised the bar in terms of what in the last 10, 15 years in terms of what is acceptable sharing just by a lot, right? Just
right.
Because of how much easier it is to share.
It used to just be what you're eating for dinner, and now it's...
Yeah, I know. It's changed. But I still think that there's a, and you may disagree, but I still feel like there's a negative connotation to being the sort of person where, you know, you're telling, or even yourself, right, where you're telling a story, where you're talking about yourself, you're putting it out there of like, should I be doing this? Should I be talking about the things that I think or the things that I care about, you know, or my experiences, et cetera? Like, you know, why am I doing that? Why am I making that available?
So you're saying by participating in social media that there's a negative connotation that you are needy in some way or damaged in some way because you're trying
therapy.
To participate.
You're
in
trying to get free therapy.
Well, I think that's probably a thing. I think more often people are just trying to get free oxytocin doses of people like me and I'm an important member of the tribe, right? And I guess, yeah, some of it you see people trying to live out their therapy experiences. I don't know. I just think it's not universal, but trending towards.
So for instance,
you know, 80%.
For instance, and you know, the last couple episodes we did were the beginning. I was talking a lot about personal experiences I had of, you know, how we
right.
eat dinner and different things like that. And my reaction to mm-hmm. listening to that later was, maybe I shouldn't talk so much about myself, right? Maybe I should talk about something else. I mean, it's like this immediate reaction of like, you don't want to be caught, right? You don't want to be caught.
Right. So you had a reaction to what you thought someone's perception of that would be.
Yeah.
As opposed to like, we're having a conversation and recording it. And then, so those
well, because I was faced with the fact, like I might have that conversation with you anyway.
Right.
And I would have no later realization that maybe I went on and on. You might have. And you might have been like, man, he went on and on. And so what that did is it made me look at it again or listen to it, I guess, literally, that, man, I went on and on. And I wish I hadn't. And there's like this, you know, reaction inside. And I wonder, does everybody have that? Like, is that a universal thing for people to have? There are some people just like, yeah, whatever. Everyone should want to listen to me. I don't know.
I mean, I think it's really common for people to second guess themselves and be thoughtful about that sort of thing. But I think it's kind of the more reality minded people that kind of more technically minded folks that worry too much about that sort of thing. Most everybody else, I think, you know, maybe has a like an exceptional kind of social filter built in, mm-hmm. right? That they work with and just kind of turns on and off mm-hmm. and gates that sort of stuff, right? Is that
right? I mean, I always call it like salesman personality. It's kind of a bad way, but it's like the ability that some people have when they're in a social situation to kind of just, you know, be happy, be comfortable talking about whatever it might be, smile,
right.
nod,
right.
you know, I'm all interested in you, like that whole back and forth that
right.
you have to do, right? Like that's the thing that I always think of in my head, like that's what salespeople do, right? They're making this other person feel comfortable
mm-hmm.
so that they're going to want to buy something from mm-hmm. them, right? And I don't know if that's really what they do, but that's what I have in my head.
Politician behavior,
exactly. And I'm not saying it's necessarily fake, although this is why I connect it to this authenticity conversation. I'm not saying it's necessarily fake. I mean, I think you can, you know, genuinely be like that. But if you're someone who's a little bit more like the way I'm built, it's you either can kind of like be quiet in those situations,
right?
Or you can go the other way and you like do the quote go on and on type thing, and you're like, maybe I should have just shut up, right? and so you don't want to feel like you're just sitting there talking about, you know, something that you're not even interested in, like it, you know what I'm saying? It's
yeah.
I think that's a skill. I think it's a practice skill that people have to talk about that stuff. And I'm not saying I have to either be quiet or talk about myself. That's not what I don't want to give that impression, but it's like, I want to hear interesting stories as well, but it's kind of like just playing that, like, pleased to meet you, shake your hand, you know, and go to talk to the next person, and kind of that ice breaking type of stuff. Like you always try to be on your guard of like, okay, I'm going to do this, but I'll make sure I don't overshare while I'm doing this.
Am I shaking their hand too long?
Am I telling them something that they're not comfortable with?
Oh,
like,
no.
Like, what
oh,
am I
no.
doing here? Right. And so
it's just, last time I had my back surgery.
Right. And when people do that, you kind of cringe and you recoil a bit. Right. And so.
Yeah.
Don't you?
No, I used to work with this guy who is just a wonderful, nice guy, but he would kind of spontaneously tell you about his college roommate from 20 years ago and how they were sleeping together. Just
out of nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're just like, what is happening right now? And so, I think in those situations, there's like a violation of kind of norms, right? Like the domains that are appropriate for, like, I'm standing at the coffee thing and I'm waiting for my coffee so I can go write some more code again. Oh God, we're talking about your childhood now, right? Like, you know,
or your last doctor visit,
you know, how much your groin hurts you or something, right? Like, cause you strained something. I mean, yeah, there's definitely norms around topics and domains that, you know, you need a specific context to be talking about them in.
But at the same time, if you never step over any line,
right,
you never develop any friends, you never develop
right.
deeper relationships, right? You never connect with people unless you know when to push against those norms a little bit.
Yeah.
Is that true? I
mean, yeah, no, it is. It also lets you alienate people much more quickly too, right? Like it's you figure out so I'm going to overshare now. So cuz we're being authentic. I'll never forget this conversation, and it's one of those situations where I look like an asshole and I'm not trying to be an asshole, and I'm really sad. But I'll never forget this. We're in college and, I'm hanging out with somebody and we go to somebody else's room for something. And I was like, oh wow, this is really impressive. This is like a really Spartan room. Like there's almost nothing in here. That's awesome. And guy's like, who's this asshole? Like, tell me I don't have stuff in my room. I was like, well, no, it's impressive. Like I have like piles of books and crap and like had like, you know, built structures and like, I don't need all this like garbage in my room. Right. And I'm like, oh, this is really impressive. Someone who's really, you know, thoughtful enough on how they live their lives that they're not filling their house or their space with crap. But, but you know, I broke that wall and it was, you're a dick.
Yeah,
right.
Well, like,
So I think intention and timing matter, right? I think in that scenario, he was ascribing kind of an intention to me that wasn't there. I was just a dumbass and I was being observant and had probably read too much Greek history or something recently, right? Like,
right. Or that's another thing that, and this isn't really oversharing. We're just talking about like awkward social things you do. You know, when someone brings something up and then, you know, in your head, you have some tangential piece of trivia that you share for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah.
And everyone looks at you like, why did you just share that? And if you're not around people that know you well, it can be a little bit strange.
So yeah.
That's why I like to be around people I know well.
Right.
So that they're okay with that.
So that they look at you like you're crazy less often.
Exactly.
Yeah, I experience that
as well.
Or they
get used to it. They just, you become
just
normalized.
The smile and nod, yep, that's a Jasonism. Yeah,
that applies to both of us.
Yeah, no, I'm well aware, because you know, you get really excited, like, oh, we're talking about this. I bet they didn't know about that Latvia's, you know.
Or have you ever met someone at a party or some type of thing that has a job or is involved in something, either career or not, that you either is like completely tied to something you're a fan of, for instance, like I remember about 15 years ago. I met a guy that worked at Steve Jackson Games, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right? And so I was just fascinated.
Oh my God.
Well, I mean, I don't even like Steve Jackson Games, but I don't. I really think it's a terrible game company, but that aside.
Oh my God. So Jason likes games a lot and has strong opinions.
I was just like, wow, this is the first person I ever met that works at a game company and he writes this stuff. And what's that like? And I feel bad because in retrospect, I probably cornered the guy and talked to him for an hour and he just wanted to like not be near me.
He was trying to get to the Doritos and it's like, why is this guy asking me about where we get our cardboard?
I don't think I asked about the cardboard. I think it was more about the writing process and how they come up with the stuff.
Do you get your ideas?
There you go.
What sort of trees did the cardboard come from? For those, is it special trees? Are they rubber
Tell
trees?
Tell me you've never been at a
no.
I'm
sure I've been that person. Right. I can't think of one right now because I avoid social situations like the plague. But I'm pretty sure I've done that 3 or 4 times. But usually I'm not. You know, I doubt that I've cornered people. More like I would be in that situation. They would just blink and walk away.
So the other aspect of this oversharing, you know, we talked a little bit about Deuce. There's this guy, Zay Frank, who did a whole year of videos. You know, now he does, I don't even know what he does in media. I'm not entirely sure if he works for BuzzFeed or something, but he was very, very successful at the time. And he was doing stuff in video online that nobody was really doing. It was kind of the dawn of YouTube.
Right.
But the core of what I think I connected to with what Zay did was his like honesty and his just the way that he shared whatever he was thinking about. Like he just went on camera and he started talking about, you know, emotions and feelings. Like he wasn't giving you information. Like he was talking about, hey, if you're having a shitty day, like this is how you feel. And it was this like little dose of therapy and seeing somebody else be honest in this whole thing. And I found it absolutely gripping. I mean, it was, you know, he didn't do that every day. He did like, he would do funny things, but it all felt so genuine. It might've been utterly calculated. I have no idea, but it really felt real when I was watching it.
But he also like didn't corner you at a party where you were tired and didn't want to be
there.
Like, start talking about his feelings, right? Like it's one of those things that we're not allowed to do. And I think we're not allowed to do it just in the modern world. Like you're not allowed to, cause you spend all your day around people at work and you're not going to talk about your, like,
I don't,
well, some of us do, but
no, I work. I just don't spend my day around people. I'm working at home alone.
Some of us have an office that we go to. And, but I guess probably I would say the majority of people that do work, right? Like they're not in that sort of social situation where you're going to be talking about how your aspirations to be a lead guitarist at night is not working out or whatever, right? Like you're failing at your life that really connects to people, but not, you just don't have a context for that. Right. Like in day-to-day life, there's not a place for you to have those conversations. And so,
yeah,
I mean, obviously he was an early successful YouTuber, but
he was very much doing the overshare. Right. I mean, I would feel incredibly self-conscious. It took a lot of guts for him to assuming the things he was talking about were actual real things, which I believe them to be.
Right.
And he was talking about, you know, himself a fair amount of the time and just kind of coming up with crazy things and basically putting himself in a place where, hey, people might love this and people might take hits at me. And, you know, and like I said off the bat with S-Town or whatever, is like, if you're going to do any type of work and you're going to share it with other people and it's not just going to sit in your, you know, your room, your drawer, whatever, you know, you put it out there. And you have to be prepared for people to hate it or for no one to even see it at all, for it to just be totally obscure, or, you know, and for people to ignore it. You know, you have to be kind of prepared to be ignored, prepared to be hated, prepared for people to think that you have bad motives, that you're doing it for a reason other than, you know, because you enjoy creating the work.
Well, you have to be ready for a lot of rejection. Like, that's the nature of kind of creating art in the world. If you're a writer, you have to submit Well, you don't have to. You can write and put your stuff in a drawer. And I've been guilty of this off and on, but you also can write and submit, right? And if you're going to try to be a writer or an artist or whatever, mm-hmm. you have to share your stuff with the world, or you're kind of putting it in a box and wrapping it up and saying, oh, this is too precious for people to criticize me about. And you're not going to get better. You're not going to make progress over time because, you know, you're talking to yourself in a closet. So I think it's an important thing to any kind of art that it be bounced off of reality and bounced off of other people. And so
it's hard to do because, I mean, the rejection's probably bad, but the just being ignored is probably
worse. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's a kind of rejection, right? Like it's the ghosting.
Yeah.
The ghosting, sure. Kind of a, like, no one shows up to your party.
It is
sort of situation.
Yeah.
No, it's true, but I mean, that's why most people aren't successful artists, right? Like, is they don't make stuff and stick with it when no one's paying attention and everyone is rejecting them, right? There are all these stories, and I guess it many of them probably are apocryphal, right? About books like Dune or all these famous works where people will take them around and around and around to try to sell them somewhere, mm-hmm. and people reject them. Well, Robert Persig just died, right? The author.
Oh, did he die?
Yeah, Zen of the
Motorcycle Maniacs.
Right. He just.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, like.
He hasn't done anything. He hasn't created any public works I'm aware of in a long time.
Well, he released, was it Lila, right?
Well, yeah, which but that is was years ago.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah. But he just died, and again, I don't know if it's apocryphal, but he talks about shopping that around, and everyone's like, "Who's going to read this? Who's going to read this?"
I can understand.
Yeah,
I read it, and yeah. I think I enjoyed it at the time. But it's also that's the type of work that it's very personal. I mean, it's extremely personal, but you know,
right?
And well, you can create a lot of work. I shouldn't say that, like, you know. Maybe all art is personal, but when the art contains yourself,
right?
I think of that as more personal, right? As opposed to you just putting yourself into it.
A thinly disguised version of yourself, so thinly disguised, most people don't realize it's a novel, and yeah.
Right. And so what I mean by that is people rejecting or hating that work is more than just the work, it's yourself.
Yeah. You're
supposed to a painting you created.
You are now valueless
because you told your story. Like
you. Yeah.
Right? Like, if I wrote my memoir
and no one bought it
and no one was interested, I would say, well, my life is my life that uninteresting, or am I that bad of a writer?
Aw. No, there is a way where people will take rejections of their work as like personal affronts and just stop working, right?
I think it'd be hard to be an artist.
Well, yeah, no, it is, right? Because you have to kind of work forever, and maybe you die, and everyone still thinks you suck. And then 20 years later, they're like, oh my gosh, this guy was a genius, or gal, or whatever. You know, that sort of thing happens, right? Mm-hmm. Like, was it Melville that was like...
I was just going to say it was Moby Dick, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So Moby Dick was like, what a terrible, like, who wants to read this garbage, it, while Melville was alive, right. And then now he's, you know...
Great American novel.
Yeah. So...
You never know.
Well, there you go. I think it goes to motivation, right? You shouldn't. I think it's a pretty bad investment to try to become a famous artist if you don't love making art, right? Like,
yeah,
you might succeed, but probably not.
So, is this art?
I mean, everything's art to an extent, right? Like, it's
or is this just sharing?
Oh God!
It's sharing time.
I mean, if it was just sharing, you know, I could turn on my PlayStation and play some video games, and I guess people do that. That's art now too. Damn it! I just dissed PewDiePie. Damn it! On accident. Whippersnappers in their Twitch.
No, I mean, now that we have things like S-Town,
yeah,
which people construe as art,
right?
Like, now do we have to?
High art.
Listen, well, no, it's not high art. Listen to different podcasts and productions, and now we have to decide which are art and which aren't.
So I mean, we're going down the vein of kind of what is art and what is not art, and
that's a topic for a different day.
Oh no, it's so built around.
I'd
marketing.
Rather talk about what's a sport and what's not a sport.
Oh god,
that's easier.
Bowling? Are we going to talk about bowling
now?
About
bowling. It's always a good argument, though.
What's sport and not a sport? Oh god,
this saw is polo be... on television today for the first time.
Right? Okay,
I'd never seen
on horses, not water polo.
Polo. I'd never witnessed
actual
competitive polo.
Really?
Watched it for about 3 minutes.
Was the queen watching?
No, no, it was ridiculous.
It sounds ridiculous.
It was as ridiculous as you can imagine.
You know what? Jousting sounds more reasonable to me than polo.
They should bring real jousting back.
I would watch that.
I mean, the fact that people do really violent sports, why not? I get maybe, okay, I don't know if the horses got hurt. So the horses got hurt, then fine, leave it out of it.
Oh, yeah, no, the horses definitely can get
okay,
hurt.
Okay, so then we shouldn't do it. But if there's a way to do robotic jousting, maybe we
okay.
should try that.
Wow. With yeah. robotic.
Robotic with spears going to people. That sounds like a bad idea.
This is not safe.
Sounds like a bad idea.
I think, I don't know what happened, but that doesn't sound
like. Sounds like people would do it, though.
I'm sure it's happening right now. I'm sure there's drone jousting, actually. Right?
Probably.
You put.
There's
put,
certainly drone racing.
Put little Star Wars action figures on there with little lance and like run at each other on a. It's got to be.
I don't know.
Someone's done this.
Probably.
but it wasn't authentic.
Do we have a show email, by the way? Do we have one?
We don't. We could.
Because I was going to say, if anyone's listening and wants to tell us about any jousting they're aware of, they could send it to our show email.
But oh.
I'm not sure if we have one.
Yeah, we don't right now. They could tweet at the
at Context Free?
Yeah, they could tweet at that. But,
all right.
But I guess I could set up an email. It's going to cost money, though. Everything costs money.
No, I don't think we need an email.
Okay. So we no email for you.
Well, we could have contextfree@gmail.com.
We could.
We don't have it, so don't
probably
send anything
taken.
There.
Yeah, someone else is getting that, and they're mad at us right now.
Context-free show.
Yeah. Well, we're in trouble now. Well, so that's the oversharing side of it, I guess. I mean, it's I just. Yeah, I
was trying to gain greater comfort with. What I perceived as my
your horrible talking about dinner and making decisions, or
I guess.
Oh, I mean, it didn't seem bad to me.
Oh,
it
good.
Seemed no. I mean, it seemed in context, which is weird for us, but yeah, no, it didn't seem bad to me. I guess what where you seem to be going is. In terms of oversharing being either a form of kind of super narcissism, right?
Yes. Yes.
Or just derpy awkwardness where you're...
that too.
you.
Am I derpy awkward or am I a super narcissist? what choices I have.
Can you be both? Why not
Couldn't I just
both?
Be one?
yeah. No. We're going to make you an action figure. It's going to be both. But I think to a certain extent, making art is a little bit narcissistic, right? Because you're going to do something, you assume there's somebody else that cares. Right?
Well, but that's exactly it. It's like, this is exactly where I wanted to go. Is that at some point, right? At some point, you just have to be like, look, if you want to impugn somebody's motives for creating a work, mm-hmm. creating art, for talking about something, it's like, why even bother? Just like just go away. I mean, like, just stop impugning people for, like, stop hating, you know?
Just ranting about the haters now.
No, it's just, you just see a lot of it, right? I mean, it's just the nature of, because there's, you know, you can have anonymous trolls that no matter what anybody puts out there, it you know, kind of, it gets torn down by somebody.
Well, yeah, and it's also, I mean, part of it's a lot easier to be a critic or knock stuff down.
It's not the critic who counts.
Make anyone or make anything, right? Like it's a lot easier to destroy than create, right? Like that's a kind of historical truth, but I mean, I don't know. I think people are really threatened by other people that do things with their lives and create things. I really think they are, because they see it as a reflection of the things that they haven't done. And they just find it threatening, and they lash out. You know, it's say you want to do something your whole life and someone else does, and so you're like, fuck that guy, like he's terrible, right? And it, and I really think,
because I have the opposite reaction.
You're like, I love everybody.
No, when I see somebody, so for instance, I was watching the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction thing last night.
Okay,
right, and the closing thing was Pearl Jam. I like Pearl Jam well enough. I've never really seen them. I'm not a part of the Pearl Jam fan kingdom or whatever.
Fan kingdom.
Whatever it is. Yeah, there's a lot of people that are...
The jamdom.
The jamily, I believe.
The jamily?
Yeah.
Oh,
there's a lot of people that are Pearl Jam fans.
It just got wrong. But okay, keep
going.
No,
I think it's a thing.
Really?
They said jamily at some point.
Okay, I'm writing that down.
Sure. So seeing that, you know, they all kind of talked. They, you know, thank you, blah, blah, blah. Eddie Vedder went on. And, you know, he's... I mean, there's an example of a guy who's... you know, he's caught a lot of breaks. He's done a lot of whatever works, but he's done what he's done, not just for music, but also like with his own purpose, whether you agree with the purposes that he fights for, you know, his own activism, like he cares deeply about things and does stuff beyond just singing and playing guitar and writing songs. Right. And so he's gotten involved in that. And so that show ended and I was like, oh, that's fine. I proceeded to spend the next like 2.5 hours last night till like 11:30, and then like another 2 hours this morning, just being on YouTube, just watching watching videos of like live concert videos of just different bands and acts that I like, because he just kind of got me excited about the fact of, you know, here's of what this guy has done with his life. He's like 52, so I mean, he's, you know, 10 years older than I am.
And you still haven't been inducted into the Rock and Roll
Hall of Fame. I'm not going to amount to that, right? I mean, you have to have your own justifications for kind of what you've accomplished and what you think of yourself. But just looking at all of the different, because when it comes to art form, like live music is definitely the thing that I appreciate. You know, some people like artists or theater, etc. But I mean, that's the art form for me that I really like, seeing people's engagement and their passion and what they're doing and how much they're putting into that. And so I just kind of celebrated that for hours, you know, and I was just getting addicted to like, I'm like, oh, I want to go see, you know, Guided by Voices there, or, you know, just different acts play that I enjoy. And it got me excited. What I'm contrasting to that, to seeing their acceptance speech and being like, oh, screw those guys. Like, you know, I could have been them or what, like, that's not my reaction. I wanted to see more things of people that I thought did something with their fortune in music.
Yeah. So. But you're also not fundamentally unhappy either, right? Like,
no.
So I think it's really a, you know, somebody's life sucks and there's someone who's doing really well and they're, Maybe in a way they want to do well, right? And they're resentful, you know, for whatever reason. I'm not saying it's rational and that they're sitting there and like, oh, I never became a famous guitarist, so I'm gonna diss those guys. I just think they have a kind of a visceral reaction to, you know, a feeling of unfairness in the world where they didn't get this thing that someone else got. Now, you don't see, I'm assuming Eddie Vedder practiced his, you know, vocal technique and guitar, et cetera, over time, I'm sure.
Thousands of hours.
But you don't see that, right? Like, you see, you know, the Pearl Jam's on the TV playing one song, you're like, you know, so.
It is true that everybody who, not everybody, but I would say that probably, well, maybe everybody, they all caught breaks in other people's, you know, good attitude towards them in some way, or some break they caught that got them to where they are. I mean, you almost have to. I mean, there's just too many damn people who are trying to you know, make a buck by producing their work, that you have to catch a break somehow for someone to notice you, for your stuff to get spread.
Yeah, but what is it? Is it the Boy Scouts
Yeah, you got to be ready.
Yeah, you know, always be prepared, right? Like,
you got to put in the work, but it's not just the work.
Right.
It's both.
So, but what I guess what I'm saying is, if you don't do the work, you won't be ready when you That's catch right. your break, right? Versus if you do the work and, you know.
But who are these people that are doing the work and then seeing other people get famous and just
I don't think they're off. I don't think they're doing the work, right? Like I think it's in the nature of people that I think it's in the nature of haters to hate, and I don't think they're doing the work, right? Because if they were doing the work, they would have some semblance of success. You know, maybe they wouldn't be Pearl Jam, right? Because there's only so many places in the world for somebody like that. But maybe they would be playing locally and be like a popular local band or mm-hmm. something, right? I just I think those people are, you know, kind of having this fairness reaction, right? Like it's unfair that these people are getting this thing or kind of emotional response. But I don't think I suspect if they had done the work, right, they would have kind of a different emotional response to that situation. Like unless like Eddie Vedder stole their girlfriend or something, right? Like
I don't know. Again, I don't know that much about Eddie Vedder and their whole history.
I don't either.
I just saw these guys standing up there. I remember where I was the first time that I saw the Alive video on MTV, for instance, right? I remember I was in my basement, saw it on TV, and, you know, thought it was really great. I, you know, kind of followed them a little bit after that. Did not continue in Pearl Jam fandom. But just seeing what they've done over the last, whatever, 25, 6 years since they broke, which they were a band before then, of course, right. They broke like 91 or something. You know, and now they're up there, you know, they're kind of getting the highest accolade, I guess you can get in that industry being, you know, inducted and just seeing that that he has other things that he cares about and the things that, there's more to it. Like David Letterman actually did their introduction, right? I guess it was supposed to be Neil Young or something, but it was, I have no idea, but David Letterman did their introduction and he brought up a small guitar that Vedder had given to Dave to get for his kid. And he wrote in this letter to David Letterman's kid and Dave read the letter and, you know, I mean, it's just that type of stuff of, you know, it just seems like a guy who really gets it, who gets, you know, things about life and not getting all caught up in just like I'm a rock star, blah blah blah, you know.
Yeah, he hasn't died of heroin yet, so obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean he seems like a good person in this sense.
He's also a Cubs fan.
Oh, well. And so obviously he's a good person.
No. but another reason for me to like him, that's all.
I guess I was more going down the path of he hasn't let this go to his head and become some sort of kind of narcissistic monster, at least that we know of. Maybe he has a really good publicist that sends kids guitars, you don't know.
That's true.
but yeah, so what you're saying is that Eddie Vedder is authentic.
Yeah, I guess I am. I'm saying Eddie Vedder struck me as authentic and it inspired me to go and watch a lot of the other acts that I enjoy and it just brought me a lot of joy. Since turning that show off last night of like, boy, I could just sit here and watch live act after live. And I just did that for a long time. And I was like, I'd rather do that than watch a movie. I was having a great time. So just kind of playing personal VJ there. So thank you, YouTube. Thank you, people who put stuff on YouTube. And thank you, corporations that don't force people to take shit down off YouTube.
Thank you for not taking down all the good things off of
there
YouTube.
There you go.
I think it's interesting. So when we talked last time that we talked about this topic, I was thinking of some stuff that Marco Arment said.
Who's Marco?
So Marco Arment is he worked for Tumblr early on as an engineer, and he made a number of apps. He made Instapaper. And he made Overcast, which is the podcast player that I use. But he also made The Magazine, which was a magazine published on iOS for a while. And he's done a number of other things. So The Magazine, for example, did not succeed right in really at all, from what I can tell. But he's done a lot of kind of really successful things.
Which is more successful, Instapaper or Overcast?
Yeah, I guess what's
I don't
what's,
know the answer
what's your
to this.
Metric? For
I don't know.
Success? So he sold Instapaper to yeah, it was like the like Pinterest or somebody like that, right? And he sold it to a third party that they were going to maintain it, and then I think they sold to Instapaper at some point. So, you know, he just had solved the problem. I'm speaking for somebody that I don't know, but I think, right, he'd solved the kind of interesting problems of that business that he enjoyed doing and wanted to move his life on and do other code things or other fun things, right? And try, you know, doing that magazine thing and eventually Overcast. So Marco can correct us if I'm totally wrong. But so I don't know what successful means, right? Like he was paying for his life and doing what he needed to do with Instapaper. And I think he's doing the same thing now with Overcast. Is he making more money with Overcast? I have no idea.
Yeah.
So I can't contrast the two. It's just Overcast what he's doing now, right? Like he's spending time on that and some podcast editing.
So what does Marco have to do with authenticity?
So when he released what I think the second version of Overcast, maybe the first version, I have to go back and look. He showed up on a number of podcasts talking about one of which was Debug with Guy English and Renee Ritchie. I'm gonna get the name.
Not Guy Ritchie. No, that was the guy that was married to Madonna.
Damn it! I get everything wrong. So he showed up on Debug, I think episode 49, and talked for like 3 hours about.
You didn't say Guy Ritchie. You said Guy English. And
did I say?
I mixed them.
You mixed them up for me.
Yeah. Anyway.
And then Ritchie Guy. What?
I don't know.
Who's on first base? I mean, so. And I need to go back and listen to it, but it's like 3 hours of conversation. A lot of it's kind of about the kind of technical, you know, it's Debug, right? Like it's a technical podcast. Mm-hmm.
Of making a podcast client.
Yeah.
Client app.
And, you know, dealing with, you know, iOS and all that sort of thing. But he talks at one point about customers and him being a single person dev shop. And I haven't come, it's been years since I've gone back and listened to it, but. You know, at one point he talks about it's a great time because, you know, you can get your voice out there and be an authentic voice in the world doing your stuff in podcasting and in so many ways that never existed before. And that people are really starved for interacting with other humans in kind of a human way. And the example he gives kind of in context, I'm flipping it around because so he's talking about his experience. He goes into this humanity thing. And to me, it's authenticity or humanity. And he gives an example, like people will just blast Overcast, right? On Twitter or something. And you're the worst. And
because it crashed or something.
Or like it doesn't, it's not
a video
player.
Another 99 cents or something.
Or it's not a video player, okay. Or it's not like...
It doesn't work on iOS 4.
or it's not on Android, so right. You're a terrible person. One star, right? Like, right. And to go even further back in time, I'm pretty sure he had this kind of one-star experience where he... Now I'm going way deep in my memory for something that probably didn't happen, but he made a mug of someone's one-star review of Instapaper. It was like it just some sort of nonsense. One star, right? And
yeah.
He just put a mug like... Screw you people, like come on, get with the times. But specifically, you know, he says, you know, look, I'm a single person developer shop, right? Like you want your money back or whatever, I'll give you your money back, but you know, you're gonna complain. Here's my response. Oh, sorry about that, blah blah blah. And the people's reaction to that.
Oh, to him saying,
to him
being honest.
Yeah, to him being honest and saying, oh well, sorry about that, you know, I screwed something up is just night and day, right? Because they're used to not interacting with people, right? They're interacting with a corporation somewhere that, and when you complain about it,
they're used to interacting with United Airlines.
They're used to being dragged out of their seat. They're used to interacting with United Airlines or some corporation where you're either dealing with some PR person that's, you know,
paid to make you go away,
and
paid to spin it
in some way. versus like the guy's just going to respond to you. Oh, sorry, man, that's broken.
Right.
Oh, well, or like, sorry, I'm not going to implement that feature. You want your money back or whatever he did. Right. Like it's like 2013, I think when that podcast was out, but,
made me think of people that get angry in GitHub comments about some open source library that they're using, and they like develop anger about something that they've not contributed towards nor paid for.
Right.
It's like, what is wrong with you?
This free thing doesn't do what I want. You're terrible. One star. we're so entitled. We're so
that
entitled.
That you have a complete open avenue to make better.
Right. Oh, yeah. That's even
worse. That's the other part of it.
It's worse.
Not just free.
You can go fix it.
You can go fix it.
I hope I've never done that. I know there's one JavaScript library that I want them to implement something, and I have definitely commented on it.
I'm not saying it's not okay to request things. That's fine.
Now I'm worried about my tone.
You do have to watch your tone because you have to remember who's on the other end.
No, I try to. Like, it doesn't always come across. But that's a kind of piece of people being thirsty for kind of human interaction and authenticity that I think.
It sounds like you are, you wrote the ad campaign for Discover credit cards, right? Have you seen that whole ad campaign?
No.
Oh, the whole thing where, you know, they call the credit card company and it's a whole series of them of different types of personality types, and they call expecting to get the normal thing you'd get at a credit card company, the stuff you're talking about.
Right.
But they get...
They pick up the phone.
No, they get this like mirror of themselves. They get this person who's like them. And so they make this human connection, right? I mean, that's the whole thing of Discover. And so, you know, like the one girl, it even goes so far as the one of the ads in the campaign, the girl ends up, and it's her sister. It's like her twin sister or whatever.
Of course.
But whatever. It's the point is that they're all expecting to go into robot mode and to voice their anger or to whatever. But then they find out, you know, that it's a real person, and so they have a completely different experience, and therefore Discover's the best credit card. So I'm saying, like, what you're talking about kind of feels like the seed of whoever wrote that ad campaign, in a way.
Yeah, well, I think people do crave that sort of thing, right? Like, I think it's just a modern problem. Like, like the modern world for Western people in America, I think it's super isolating. Like, you all create your own house. You don't live with your extended family like people have for thousands of years.
True.
You know, have these kind of corporate interactions with the bureaucracy of your child's school or your boss or like your church or whatever, right? Like, they're all these mega organizations that we're not geared to mentally appreciate as, you know, monkeys from the savannah, right? Like, we're not our genetic history is long and deep, and very little of it has been dealing with bureaucracy.
Bureaucracy does not meet our social needs as humans.
No,
correct.
No. We should start a bureaucracy to solve that problem.
Well, pretty soon under this new tax plan, we'll all just be corporations so that we can get taxed at 15%. Oh. So we can just do that.
Problem solved. We'll start bowling alone as a...
Everyone will be a corporation.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it'll be a bowling league of LLCs. That'll be great. I think it's a real problem, right? Like the loneliness of people in the modern world, because their connections to people are so tenuous and their interactions are so kind of brokered and that sort of thing. So yeah, I think it's a thing that people hunger for, and that's why, you know, board games are great, right? Like and a lot of these things where people are looking for interaction on kind of a more real level are interesting.
Yeah, you just made, when you mentioned board games, you made me think there's this, these guys Shut Up and Sit Down. I don't know if I've mentioned them before. They're a reviewer site.
Oh, that's a site? Shut Up and Sit Down?
Shut Up and Sit Down. They do a podcast. They do video.
Oh,
they do video,
okay,
reviews. They have a YouTube channel. They have a website.
All right.
They're British guys. I'm pretty sure they're British. They do great, great stuff.
When they turn out to be Canadian or Australian, you're in so much trouble.
No, South Africans are always the
South
ones.
South Africans,
I'm pretty sure they're British. But yeah, the South African one always throws me for a loop. Well, maybe they're Scottish or something. But no, I'm pretty sure they're British.
Oh god.
I'm pretty sure they're English. Anyway,
you wanted the haters to show up. Now you've got them.
No, it's my. So they were Quint is the main guy. I believe that's his name, and he was giving a talk at some type of conference or something. He's the video is of him up in front of people showing slides. Is what it is, yeah. And he's talking about the whole social nature of it, and you know about how certain games don't even really need to have any rules because the rules of the game of certain negotiation games are just the rules of being a human social animal.
Right.
And so like it's, they're all the unwritten rules that don't need to, you know, they don't need to be packaged up with it. It's like, this is going to work because we're dealing with humans and it's just the way that it's going to be, you know, I mean, you can, you know, come up and those tend to be the sorts of games, right, that tend to be party games because they have very low amounts of things you need to remember because most of what you have to do is just you be you within the few constraints that I'm going to give you. I'll give you a couple constraints and voila, you have a party game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just like, here, we'll put some boundaries around what is our playing field. And that's kind of that's almost what defines a party game is a party game is something where a lot of it is just, you know, you are you, and most of the rules are the things that you already know, as opposed to you're a European merchant in the 1450s trying to maximize your trade galleons or whatever the hell, right? And it's not that type of thing. Or whatever we do in Time Stories, we go back and...
We make Bob angry.
That's what we do in Time Stories. We make Bob angry. We do have another Time Stories.
Oh, are we ready? Are we ready? Is it out?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
It's the Polar Expedition.
Oh. God, we're all like Shack, like South Pole, Shack.
Well, it's that type of thing.
Okay.
Yeah. It obviously doesn't go well, or else we wouldn't be involved. Bob wouldn't have picked up the phone if it was a successful polar expedition.
I mean, it can't go that badly if Bob's calling us. That's all I'm saying. You go for the A team and not the B team.
As long as it's okay on the third try,
right? Yeah,
it's fine.
Yeah.
It's
poor Bob. It's hard to be Bob.
Can I talk a little bit about this game I played recently?
You may.
Close out. So I played this game a couple weeks ago. I found a great new meetup group playing with, and played this game called Captain Sonar. And I wouldn't normally bring this up, but it's but it's rare that I play something that is literally like no other game I've played before. Like, you know, usually something is like, oh, this is like that, and especially me, I'm one to be like, oh, this is like this, or has these elements. The best I can come up with this is like, you know, Battleship for adults with competent game design is sort of the way to start thinking about it. So you're two teams of four on either side of the table. So you have to have six or eight people to play this.
Right.
So you have to have, you know, a group, but it was tremendously fun. So you have each team is a submarine captain or submarine crew. One person is the captain, one person is the radio operator, one person's the first mate, and one person's the engineer. And it's all played in real time, so there's no turns. So the captains are basically, like charting their course. The goal, of course, is to blow up the other submarine. I mean, that's what you're trying to do.
Right.
Right. And I'm not going to get into all the rules, but just roughly speaking, the captains are announcing what their moves are. The opposing radio operators are charting those down, but they don't know where they started. So they have a map of the islands and whatnot. So they're like, you know, with a grease pencil, like trying to figure out like, where could they be while conferring with the captain. And again, you know, the more you move, the more info you're giving away, but you also have to move to power up like torpedoes and things that actually would do stuff. So you're doing that. The first mate is making sure that he's like charging the different systems, like, you know, to go silent or to power the torpedoes or whatever. And then you have the engineer who's like fixing the different systems, because if the engineer and the first mate and the captain aren't in sync, when the captain thinks he's going to be there to fire the torpedo of where the radio guy told him the other people supposedly are, then he's going to say, fire the torpedo. And the engineer's going to be like, we can't fire the torpedo because the torpedo's not loaded. So everyone's got, it's this incredible team communication, real-time, tense thing. Tremendously fun. I mean, it's really unlike anything in the fact that it's a co-op game, but it's team versus team. Like, it's a co-op game that you can't play with one or two people.
Right.
We played it 3-on-3. I really want to play it 4-on-4 because when we played 3-on-3, the captain and the first mate, he played both roles. But having that extra thing of like, there's the guy over there that you're not even sitting next to, would, you know, an extra element of chaos and kind of what's going on. Cause it's, you know, I was the radio operator a couple of times, and it's, you know, you're just through all of this stuff. You're trying to listen to what the other captain's saying to know where to go. Really, really, fun game. I'd heard a bunch about it, and a lot of, I mean, it would be a great thing for any team that, you know, it's like a, you could totally see this being the thing that replaces ropes courses as the team building exercise, because you really have to communicate and be in tune with what, you know, your goals are. And it's an interesting thing. So it was a lot of fun. Really, really neat. Definitely not for everyone. If you're the sort of person that, doesn't like a real time pressure in a game, like those two things are in contradiction,
right?
You would not enjoy this.
So is there like an active clock, or is there turns? Like
neither.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you move, right, you're moving, which every time you move, you can, like, the first mate can power up, like get one closer to loading a torpedo or one closer to doing a sonar thing or something like that. But by moving, you're also giving away information,
right,
to the other side. So you have to, you know, you're kind of making that choice. And then after a certain amount of time, you might have to surface, then you have to say, like, kind of what sector you're in. And so, yeah, there's no turns. I mean, the one side could go 8 times, the other side could go 3. And what's interesting is when you surface, which lets you, like, get rid of all your, basically kind of resets all your systems so that they're, okay, not going to be clogged with whatever.
Venture CO2.
Whatever, yeah. While you do that, the other team can keep going, and you have to announce, like, there's like 9 sectors, you know, A, B, 1 through 9, right? Mm-hmm. It's like a grid. You have to announce what sector you're in, so now they can really narrow it down. And in real time, you have to do this, like, grease pencil tracing of stuff and show it to the other team. So there's, like, this element of, like, having a steady hand to do this tracing and show them, and then you can get down, and hopefully you have your silent thing to get the hell out of Dodge. So it's while they're coming after you and maybe, like, you know, firing a torpedo at your ship, and you have this divider in between you on the table. I should show you a picture of it, but Captain Sonar, it's definitely a really interesting game, and I'm glad to see some innovation in that space. I mean, a lot of the games that you would see, you know, for, like, larger group style games are either from the Werewolf family, like the Resistance, Mafia, right, Werewolf, right, Bang, etc. Or just more of the trivia or outburst family of games, like Recall, some list of stuff, right? I mean, even Codenames is kind of like that, you know, word related,
right?
So one's more like social deduction, another one's a little bit more word related, and this one's just kind of, to me, it's like it's about that moment when it's like, this is the top of the tree of something, like nothing is quite like this for me. So thought it was very cool.
Optimum weird game. Did you have, like, submarine hats on or anything?
No
costume involved.
No, there's no submarine knowledge, no, like, required.
No submarine LARPing.
No, there's nothing like that.
Don't have a periscope.
No, you're just sitting at the table with a big cardboard laminated divider in between you, and you have your grease pencils and whatever.
I like the idea of the laminate grease pencils. That's what makes it for me, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Do you have like a Lexan, like a piece of, like, a plastic that you're writing on?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yep. So you have the acetate layover on top of the map, right? And so you're doing the node to node, the point to point type thing, and then you're figuring on the islands, like, okay, where could they be? And then, you know, you're writing little notes down of, like, okay, they fired a thing there, so I know that they're not there. You know, that type of stuff. Yeah, and it's pretty cool. And each of the different jobs, roles, whatever, the captain, the radio guy, etc. I mean, they all feel different enough,
right,
that you could get a little bit different experience. And I imagine it's the sort of game, in the same way that some of the social deduction games tend to, if you play with, you know, a similar kind of larger group of people, they develop their own meta of, you know, the outcomes and tactics of previous contests.
Right.
Start to become part of the group memory, and so it's like, oh, are they starting there, and are they faking us out based on what they did before? You know, and they're like, maybe the 12th time you play isn't like the second time you play, because not only are you a better team, but you have this group memory about previous battles,
right?
So, and you know some of the tactics that have happened before. So I think that those aspects of games like The Resistance to me have always been interesting. Like, if you, I've played that game with some people. I used to play with a bunch of guys at work, and, you know, we would play a few weeks in a row, and you would learn certain people's behavior, and then they would make their own adjustments to that behavior. And then it becomes the whole, am I, you know, should I have the wine in front of me or the wine in front of you type of thing. Like, you're not sure if they're faking you out or if they're faking the fake.
Yeah. So it's like the Hunt for Red October scene where they're like, oh, at the top of the hour, he always turns to starboard. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. Like, is he at the spot or that? So pretty cool game. And nothing to do with authenticity, but I just wanted to bring it up because I thought it was different. And
no, it's I like board games. We need more board game topics.
Oh, I'm sure I could do that.
Oh, no. Context Free is a contrarian content production. Find out more information at contextfree.fm along with our show notes. Our theme music is Chocolate and Cocaine by Lorenzo's Music. Find out more about Lorenzo's Music at lorenzosmusic.com.